This is the sound of football.
On this week's Sound of Football, we take a look at all this weekend's World Cup qualifiers, including Ireland. Could they get a result that was très bien against the French? New Zealand. Did it turn out all white on the night against Bahrain? And Egypt. Could they give the Algerians a Pharaoh run for their money? Plus, there's the latest news on Diego Maradona, Robin van Persie, plus fond farewell to Robert Enker, all on this week's Sound of Football. And it's a very warm welcome once again to another Sound of Football. Chris Oakley here, and with fingers crossed and a following wind, we should, this week, have full complement of people that you can listen to on this show after last week's debacle and technical problems and all sorts. Please welcome onto the show Terry DeFellin and Graham Sibley from Sound of Football. I said it again, nice. From some people on the pitch in the onion bag. I'll get a script one of these days. Welcome, fellas.
Hello, Chris.
Hello.
And yes, like I say, let's hope we can get through this in one piece. Anyway, we'll crack on. This week, no Premier League, no top flight stuff, domestically speaking, because of the World Cup qualifiers which were going on around the planet. Most specifically, from our point of view, in the UK, there were European playoffs involving eight teams, and there were also playoffs and other sort of final qualifying games going on elsewhere. But we'll start off with Europe, with your permission, and say four games going on there. And the first that we'll turn our attention to is the Republic of Ireland playing against France. Now, we spoke at length about this certainly last week before it all went pear-shaped, and also I think on one or two other occasions. The game finished 1-0, a 1-0 win for France at Croke Park in Dublin. And I think, Graham, if I remember rightly, you were sort of suggesting that it'll probably be, and I'm not saying this to humiliate you, by the way.
No.
But I think, I was right behind you on this. I think you sort of suggested that it could be, did you say a high scoring?
I thought so. Yeah. Well, I put it in the preview. I said 2-2 because I thought it was going to be quite a ding dong battle. And yeah. In fact, all the European qualifiers were very, very tight affairs. I mean, this was the Republic's first defeat in their qualifying run-in. So yeah. I mean, it was actually quite not a surprising defeat, I suppose. But you know, it was never going to be an easy win for France, was it?
No, indeed. I say it was just the one goal, and Nicolas Anelka scored it via a big deflection off of Sean St. Ledger, and even then that deflection went in off the post, so the Irish could probably consider themselves to be unlucky, but all that taken into consideration, France have got their away goal. And I suppose they'll be very very grateful for that, but as you say, Ireland didn't lose at all in the main qualifying competition. Their last defeat was in September 2007 against the Czech Republic. That was a European Championship qualifier. And then you have to go back another year before that for their last defeat. But all that can take into consideration, even though it wasn't a high-scoring draw, we end up with the same situation, don't we, Terry, going into the second leg, which is that basically Ireland have got to win, which is pretty much what we were saying before, and it's going to be tough for them, isn't it, against France in France.
Well, the first thing they have to do is score that away goal as quickly as possible to cancel it out.
Yes.
And then hope that they can then push on from there. I think that Irish supporters will be very optimistic if they think that they're going to go to South Africa next year, unfortunately. I think that France are in disarray in many ways, but it's going to be a heroic effort if it's going to happen at all. I'm stating the obvious, obviously, but it's not... I can't see them doing it myself, but yeah.
No, as we were saying, they were undefeated in the qualifying. But if you look at the results, and as I think you've mentioned before, Graham, actually most of the results have been draws.
Yeah,
so they just don't seem to be able to just get that win. And I mean, okay, France are, I guess, not what they were. They're also an ageing squad. They're kind of torn between this thing of sort of bedding in new players and having to perhaps rely on a few of the veterans just to kind of beef things up a bit. But
I think,
having said that...
I think another thing about the Republic is they don't score enough goals. And without Robbie Keane leading the line, I mean, if they were to lose him, you struggle to think, well, where the hell are the goals going to come from?
Well, a spirited performance it was actually by Ireland, and they worked hard, and if they can just find the goals in the second leg, they will be in with a good chance. Mm. But not expecting perhaps too much there. France hold the upper hand going into the second leg. Elsewhere, among the other European qualifiers, Portugal against Bosnia-Herzegovina. Portugal got a vital goal there, another 1-0 win for them.
That's carrying on their form in the whole campaign, really, isn't it?
Mm, this just sneaking along there. Yeah. Yes, their goal was scored by Porto defender Bruno Alves after 31 minutes. Portugal looking to qualify for their fifth World Cup and their third in succession. They've managed to stop Bosnia-Herzegovina from getting an away goal, so that's good for Portugal, obviously.
Did you see that, Terry?
Yeah, I saw some of that game. Portugal didn't take advantage of the possession that they had and could have scored more goals. Mm. Having said that, Bosnia hit the post three times in two successive incidents.
That's right.
So it could easily, they were very unlucky not to get that away goal. I think that this is going to be a much, much difficult, much more difficult for Portugal to get past. And I'm confident, and I'm biased because I want Bosnia to go through. But I'm confident that Bosnia can still turn that one around, because they looked going forward. They look very good. They have problems at the back, but going forward they've got some very strong players. And the only thing that they will worry about, of course, is their conceding an away goal, so early in the game. But I think that if they can take the game by the scruff of the neck there, that they could still prevail.
Bosnia-Herzegovina will be actually without three key players after they picked up bookings in that match against Portugal, so they will be slightly weakened. But as you say, I mean, for the 1-0 win, actually Portugal, from what I saw of it, looked like they were just lacking anyone who could just finish off and just sort of, you know, just like stick the ball in the net. And they wasted an awful lot of chances. We mentioned Zlatan. Well, we didn't mention him personally. Zlatan Muslimovic. He hit the post from a rebound after Edin Dzeko headed against the bar. So Bosnia have got some kind of, you know, potential there for scoring. So they've both, I guess, got to sharpen up. And as you say, from Bosnia's point of view, they've just got to sort of try and shut out Portugal during the course of that match. So it's still sort of all to play for there, I guess. excuse me, I do apologise, I had a bit of a slight frog in my throat. Looks like it's going to be an intriguing one in the second leg, which is going on Wednesday. So Portugal take a 1-0 lead going into that one. Russia versus Slovenia, that was an intriguing one. That finished Russia 2, Slovenia 1. And both of Russia's goals were scored by Everson's Bilyadinov. Did I say that correctly?
Bilyadinov.
Him. He scored a goal either side of the half-time break. And I don't know about what you chaps sort of saw, what you saw of the game or what you've heard about it, but from what I saw, Russia looked like they were in command for most of the game, actually. And it was a bit of a surprise that Slovenia managed to get their goal back, and right near the end, only 2 minutes from the end, if they could have just held out for those extra couple of minutes,
well,
Russia would have been home and dry.
Didn't you, Terry?
Yes,
about five minutes ago, you said they were just sitting back there and just like quite comfortable with the 2-0, and I was actually in the car at the time listening to I had the England game on Radio 5, and then they came in with the news that Slovenia had got a goal back, and I thought, well, this is great, this is really like picking this one up for the next tie, for the next round.
Absolutely.
That tie for me is all open now, because really, like, Russia should have put that one to bed. They really should.
Exactly.
Have done.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, the Russia contained. The Slovenia were quite plucky at the early part of the game. First 10-15 minutes, sort of had a bit of a go, but Russia really contained them, and then sort of gradually sort of took control of the game. And after the second goal, it was difficult to see anyone. Anyone but Russia really going through to the World Cup. You know, over the two legs. You know, they've done that here. However, if you've seen Russia play recently, you'll know that they do tend to sort of fall asleep. Mm. And I think that they kind of perhaps think that they're maybe a little bit better than they actually are, and they were caught on the hop, and actually once Pechenik scored the goal, with the remaining time that they had left, Slovenia suddenly were buoyed by this and went, come on, let's see if we can get another. And obviously it didn't happen, but I think that there's enough about Slovenia to suggest that they'll really cause Russia some serious problems in the second leg. Their record is their defensive record is fantastic, and so, you know, an away, you know, a single goal from Slovenia is going to win that tie, and they don't give many goals away, especially at home, Slovenia. So that's going to be a really difficult game for Russia now.
Yeah.
And there could be a real upset on the cards there, and it would be a genuine upset, let's be honest.
And they've got pretty fervent home support as well, Slovenia. It's one of those kind of places with an intimidating crowd against you if you happen to be the visiting side. So, yes, certainly Russia won't have it too easy. But they would
love it if they beat Russia. Love it.
No. I think we saw sort of both sides of Russia in that game. We sort of, you know, I think everyone was sort of saying prior to the draw for the playoffs that whoever gets Russia is going to be in for a tough time. And yet, as you say, Terry, they went asleep at the end and just showed their sort of soft underbelly, which Slovenia made up for and took advantage of. So yes,
credit to Slovenia for doing so as well, because I mean, you know, other teams perhaps wouldn't have done.
For most of the game, it didn't look like Slovenia had much to offer, but full credit to them for getting their late goal and making a game of it for the second leg on Wednesday. And the other tie was Greece versus Ukraine, which ended goalless, therefore living up to its low billing, dare I say it.
Yeah. You've got all those four fixtures that came in really quite closely. So Chris, who are your four picks for actually qualifying then?
You've got to go for France, I think. I'm inclined to go with Portugal, and I'm kind of going with form, whoever won the first leg so far. But it's just I wonder if Bosnia have got enough to make a battle of it against Portugal. Russia against Slovenia, that's a trickier one. I wouldn't mind betting that ends up in a draw, which would obviously see Russia go through. And then Greece-Ukraine, when the draw was first made, I was inclined to go with Greece. I don't know why, I just felt that Ukraine looked a little bit weak at times in England's qualification group. So I'll stick by that, I'll go with Greece. Although, technically, second leg's in Ukraine, and Greece have got the advantage because Ukraine didn't get their away goal in Greece. So, yes, I'll go with that. I'll go with France, Portugal, Russia, Greece. So shoot me.
I think that's good. What about you, Terry?
France, Bosnia, Russia, and Greece. I think. I think Russia will hang on by the skin of their teeth. I agree. I think Greece will score in Ukraine. My prediction for Bosnia is more in hope than expectation.
So I
thoroughly concede that point. Okay, all right, heart Bosnia, head Portugal. How's that?
Very diplomatic of you, Terry. And Graham, what are your thoughts just very briefly before we move on?
I think I'm going to be equally as unimaginative, I think. I'm going to be France, Portugal, Russia. I think Greece will do it because I think there's going to be a one-all draw in Kiev. If it's being played in Kiev. I presume it is.
Entirely feasible.
Yes, it's either that it's going to be played at Shakhtar's ground.
Oh yeah,
that's a thing. It could be. Who knows?
Well, there we go. So that's Europe pretty much done and dusted. Key game on the other side of the other side of the world. New Zealand have qualified for only their second World Cup. They beat Bahrain 1-0, and getting the supposedly sort of pretentious criticism out of the way first. I mean, I saw the match, and being bluntly honest with you, if you were going to compare it to any kind of standard in British football, in terms of the quality of football played, I'd say it was sort of par with like League Two, and I don't mean that to be damning for either party really, but it was not the best sort of technical football, you know, technical skills and so on that you'd ever likely to see. But Bahrain continued with the same approach that they've had in all their recent sort of qualifiers, which is basically to come out onto the pitch and be unimaginative and not particularly positive, And we've seen, I've seen New Zealand play like that once or twice as well recently, like in the Confederations Cup and so on. But to their credit, they did come out New Zealand and were very positive and looked like they wanted to win the game. And I'm really pleased that they actually did win it 1-0 in the end. Rory Fallon of Plymouth Argyle, no less, got the goal just for half time. Terry, you saw some of that?
Yeah, I mean, New Zealand were quite negative in the Confederations Cup because they knew they were going to get an absolute pasting.
Yeah.
This time around, though, they knew that they didn't have to be. They had no choice. They had to win the game if they wanted to go through. Bahrain, easily good enough to have won that match. And you're right, Chris, if they had tactically decided to go out there and actually win it, then I think that they would have won that.
Mm.
I'm disappointed because Bahrain is one of the poorer nations in that region, and they've been knocking on the door for such a long time.
Well, they missed out on the playoff the last time around, didn't they?
They've not got any Brazilian ringers like it. They've not got any Brazilian ringers like the other, you know, a lot of the other teams from that region. You know, they've got they're all homegrown players, and it's you know,
or indeed Brazilian coaches, I suppose, either.
Well, yeah, I'll be honest, I don't know who the Bahraini coach is, but I was quite disappointed about that. Having said that, it is great that New Zealand are there because it is a global game and you like to see it.
Well,
And it's, you know, I mean, it'll be going. The Kiwis will travel in force and they'll have a great time as well.
There is also the possibility that Australia and New Zealand could be drawn together because they're from different.
I've considered this. Yeah,
because they're
terribly
different,
interesting.
Zones,
different regions. Yeah, they are. That's right. I mean, it must be borne in mind that the only reason why New Zealand are anywhere near the World Cup is because Australia moved to Asia. But, I mean, that's all terribly sour grapeish now, you know, and New Zealand are there, they have made it. And, you know, and it's going to be really, really interesting. I mean, a lot of that team is made up of the Wellington Phoenix, which is an A-League
Indeed.
Side, lounging somewhere, languishing at the bottom of the A-League at the moment, I think, or quite close to the bottom of the A-League.
Hmm.
We're not talking about a great side, but I think they'll bring an awful lot of colour. They'll learn a lot, and I mean, if it helps to advance the game in the game's global outposts, then it's great. And of course, it's great for Mrs. Chris as well.
Well, absolutely, yes. I am not entirely biased. Yeah, but, I mean, yeah, I did have the wife watching, sort of on tenterhooks. It was when it was getting towards the end of the game there, and I was hanging on, trying to avoid conceding that sort of deadly away goal from Bahrain. It was all getting a bit tense, but it was a great match, great atmosphere. A capacity crowd at the Westpac Stadium over there in New Zealand, and New Zealand had much of the game. The Celtics' Chris Killen hit the bar after 20 minutes, and Bahrain had a penalty. They actually had a penalty after 52 minutes, and Syed Mohammed who took the penalty kick for Bahrain. It was such a weak penalty kick. It was easily saved by the Kiwi keeper Mark Passon, who plays for Wellington Phoenix. He had a great game as well. So, you know, Bahrain had their chances, but they've lost it, unfortunately. And as has been said elsewhere recently, they may not do any good on their own part at the World Cup, the next World Cup, but they will make it difficult for other teams, like countries like Scotland and so on in the past have sort of slipped up against teams of, shall we say, New Zealand standard, without wishing to be too disparaging. So, you know, if no other reason, they deserve their place in the World Cup just to kind of make it a bit tricky for the others. So, well done to New Zealand. Moving on, there was another intercontinental qualifier, the South America against North and Central America playoff. Costa Rica played Uruguay, and Uruguay won that one 1-0. Diego Luciano scoring after 23 minutes, and from what I've heard, Costa Rica didn't really give a good account of themselves in that match, and Uruguay, while not being perhaps that much better overall, had the wherewithal to get the goal and get their away goal. So I don't think that was sort of shown on ETV over here in the UK, so not probably much we can sort of talk about on that. Any points on that one?
No, none at all. Move on.
Only other than the fact that we pretty much predicted that Uruguay were probably going to win that tie overall, and they're at home in the second leg. So there we go. So it looks like Uruguay are on their way.
Don't care. Move on.
Yeah. Don't care. Move on.
Let's talk about Africa, because that was really good.
That's the real rub here that we need to talk about. There were three more places to be decided in Africa. The final round of games going on
and
Saturday.
Only two were actually decided, which was amazing.
Absolutely. It was just incredible. I mean, getting the other two, before we come to the main point there, Group 1, Cameroon sealed their qualification. They're there again. They beat Morocco 2-0, as was, again, I think pretty much predicted by us. And even if they had have drawn, Gabon, who were their only challengers, lost 1-0 to Togo.
But Group 2 was really intense, because with 10 minutes to go in both those games, Nigeria were not on the plane, were they? They were.
No, indeed. The situation there was that Tunisia just had to sort of avoid defeat, and as you say, with 7 minutes left, Tunisia let a goal in against Mozambique. But eerily, at exactly the same point in the game going on between Kenya and Nigeria, Nigeria got their third goal to win 3-2, which got them into the final. Just talk about
it's a big result, because Tunisia have been there for the last two World Cups, and. You know, the last time when there was a lot of the usual names from Africa missed out, Tunisia were the ones that actually did make it, and now they've missed out. So from Africa, it's got a very familiar feel to it this time, with Cameroon and Nigeria.
The usual suspects.
And of course, Terry, there was the big game in Group 3, wasn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. That was that was a huge match. That was. I tried to watch some of that match through various means and failed dismally because it
really should have been carried, because it's such an important game.
I can't. But there was quite a lot of interest in that game, and I'm surprised and disappointed that somebody didn't pick it up, actually. Because
absolutely.
Because it was a good one. Hopefully somebody will have the sense to pick up the playoff. But just to recap for those that don't know. Egypt needed to win at least 2-0 to prolong the qualification period. Algeria only needed, a draw or a 1-0 defeat would have seen them through automatically as right. And Egypt needed really to win 2-0 and make it 3-0 to go through. And it looked for all the world as though Algeria were going to make it. Even though Amir Zaki scored after 2 minutes, which is just about all he's done for the last 12 months.
Remember him?
And it was all looking good, and apparently the atmosphere there was unbelievable in Cairo.
Oh, I can
absolutely
imagine.
Astonishing.
Well, of course, they've got a bit of history, as we know.
Just a bit, mate, just a bit of history.
A bit of history from just like last Wednesday.
because the Algerian team coach was stoned, and some of the Algerian players were taken to hospital as a consequence of that. I don't know whether there'll be anything coming on from there. I suspect that
I think FIFA have had a word with both FAs in question and sort of said, sort your lives out, fellas. You know, let's try and kind of like give a better improve our sort of safety.
It goes beyond football, though, doesn't it? Partly. I mean, unfortunately, it's not something that necessarily football can really resolve. But I can't pronounce his name.
Metiab, I think.
Metiab, thank you. 95 minutes.
Yeah,
that's a Man United special,
minutes into injury.
There were 6 minutes of injury time given, and on the fifth minute of the six, Metiab scored and sent Cairo into absolute pandemonium.
Well, indeed. Yes.
And now there's that emergency playoff in Sudan, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, I predicted this when I was after the last round of qualifiers last month. I did a roundup of all the action and stuff, and I had a look at the table and tried to work it out, and kind of foresaw that this 2-0 result could send everyone kind of scratching their heads and looking into the rule books to see what's going to happen. But obviously, FIFA put in place the potential plan for having a one-off playoff, if you like, or a final. And as you say, Graham, it's going to be held in Sudan. I can't actually believe I've had a look, and apparently FIFA actually held a draw last week to decide where the playoff was going to take place. They held a draw for everything, didn't they?
They only recently decided to do that. I understand. I'd heard from somewhere, and I can't remember where I heard it from, so I can't name check them, but I'd heard that actually it was going to be determined by another means. But this was a recent change, possibly to reflect the just dire political situation between the two nations, and felt that if it was to go through on a toss of a coin, which I think it may have gone to, that they just weren't prepared to do that. I think that I think that this may have been hastily legislated, this one. I may be wrong about that. I'd be interested if any listeners perhaps know any better.
As I understand it, Egypt wanted the playoff to take place in Sudan, and Algeria wanted it to take place in Tunisia. So they basically did the old situation where they got the two little plastic balls, and they put one name in one and one in the other, and they rolled the two balls around in a bowl, and they picked one of the balls out, and it came out of Sudan, and that's how.
But you've got, I mean, you've got to though, haven't you? I mean, in fairness, because I mean, the thing is, that the accusations are going to be flying around.
Well, yeah.
You know, I mean, one can only imagine what kind of accusations are flying around now. As a result of that, I can guarantee you that the referee is being accused by the Algerian media of rigging it, so that they were giving too much injury time. It's another. I mean, if Manchester City can get upset about injury time, then just imagine what a whole nation of Algerians can get.
You know, the potential is endless.
Against Egypt. I mean, it's gonna be a really needs to be a dead. I mean, it's harsh because it's obviously considerably further for the Algerians to travel. Even and it's still a long way for the Egyptians. It's a big continent, Africa, and although Sudan is next door to Egypt, it's still a heck of a way to travel. But it's going to be a well. I really hope we get to see that game. Is all I can say.
I'm optimistic that Eurosport can pick out because they did show a few of the African qualifiers. So I'm just kind of you know keep my fingers crossed. So that's going to be an unbelievable match. I think. Mm.
Indeed.
Who do we want to qualify? Just at the risk of alienating part of our audience around the world. I'd like to see Algeria. Haven't seen Algeria at the World Cup for a while.
Yeah, Egypt have a big dominance of the African game. I mean, like with Al Ahly. Like,
well, they are the African champions, aren't they?
Yeah, let's have Algeria there. But then again, I mean, like you think that either team are always going to struggle to get through to the second round, it always seems. I mean, like Egypt don't seem to have that sort of like thing when they get to the major tournaments, not like Nigeria or Cameroon, that they can surprise teams and make their way to the second or even the quarterfinals like Cameroon have done in the past.
Egypt tripped up England, if I remember rightly, a little bit in 1990, along with Ireland and Holland.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
I take your point, though. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, going into that last round of games in 1990, it could have ended up that all four teams end up with the same.
Nearly end up with identical.
Yeah, it was.
They had to draw lots.
I think everyone went in there having drawn two, scored one, conceded one.
We had a slight edge, I think. Yeah,
we got out because we beat Egypt.
We beat Egypt 1-0.
So we got out of the group because we beat Egypt 1. Yeah, that's what the Mark Bright header. Everybody else drew 1-1.
Yeah.
So they had to make a draw. Yeah,
I think Ireland and Holland
got
picked out with lots, didn't they? And who's going to play who in the next round?
Yeah, I think they both got through, and that was it.
Yes. Well, yeah, because Ireland got to the quarterfinal, if you remember. So, yeah.
Okay, well, that's the exciting sort of climax to the African section, with the exception of that match going on this Wednesday in Sudan. So, we'll bring you news of that, I'm sure, on the next podcast. So, that's pretty much all the qualifiers dealt with. But there's been a few other sort of news stories buzzing around since our last podcast, and in and amongst all those qualifiers and things. We're recording this on Sunday evening, a day earlier than we normally do, for reasons that we won't bore you with. But basically, about an hour or so, I think, before we sat down to record this, we had breaking news. That's a first for this podcast, I think. And if we were on doing this on video, we'd have a little red ticker.
A yellow ticker.
Or a yellow ticker.
Breaking news is always in yellow.
The news is that Diego Maradona has been banned for 2 months. He's banned from football between November the 15th, which is today, 2009, until January the 15th, 2010, after his rather rude and lewd outburst after the Argentina's qualifier against Uruguay, in which I think Argentina sort of confirmed their qualification for the World Cup next year. And FIFA have sort of summoned him to their offices and banned him for 2 months. But it strikes me that given that Argentina haven't actually officially penciled in any games for that period, it seems like a bit of a kind of let off to me. Is that only me who's thinking it? I don't know.
Of course it is, but you know, they have to be seen to do something. But it's just
a little slap on the
wrist. Storming teacups, isn't it?
The whole thing was a bit of a storm in a ticket. I mean, he was incredibly rude to those hacks, but I mean, you know, who hasn't wanted to be incredibly rude to football journalists at some point in their life? So, you know, he took his chance when he had it, you know. I mean, what are they going to do? You can't just, you know, there's nothing more they could do. Find him a stack of money, you know. It's just, how much was it? It wasn't much, was it?
£15,000, as I recall.
So that's £15,000 less he has to give to the Italian tax man, I assume. And, you know, that's... you know, that's the end of it, really. I mean, what can you say? I mean, what he did, it didn't happen on the pitch or off the pitch. It was a press conference.
It was an incident, and
yeah. I mean, it was very funny, and I'm sure there are probably people there who took great offence. But you know, worse things have happened.
Yeah, he's. I think the Argentine FA sort of said, look, he was under a lot of pressure, which he probably was given the.
That's unquestionably true.
The ways that Argentina played in their qualifiers.
Given the terrible job he was doing, you mean? Yeah.
He put himself under a lot of pressure. And they sort of. Apparently, Maradona sort of expressed his deep remorse for everything that he said, and they went, oh, okay, fine, well. You're off. There is a sort of a friendly provisionally penciled in for December the 16th against the Czech Republic, but there's no confirmation yet that will take place. But even if it does go ahead, I suspect that Maradona won't be missing much sleep over that one. And I just wonder what sort of signals that sends out for Alex Ferguson, really, given the amount of times he opens his mouth these days and the consequences he gets for that. If he can time it correctly, he can look to be given a suspension when Man United aren't playing. Maybe that's a tactic for him to consider in the future.
Or at the end of the season, maybe.
Yes, it's just a
team-up man at the end of May, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that'll hit him really hard, yeah.
And Argentina lost their friendly during the week 2-1 to Spain, so he's consistent, if nothing else, Diego Maradona, with the way he's leading his team. So the soap opera continues with that. Elsewhere, Robin Van Persie has managed to get himself pretty badly injured, and this will have an impact on your outlook for the next few Arsenal games, Graham, I'm sure. He got himself injured at 10 minutes into the friendly between the Netherlands and Italy. He's got a partially ruptured ligament, we're led to believe, and so that could be him out for a couple of months.
Yep. Guess so. there's not really a lot to say about really that, really. I mean, like, you know...
I can tell it's an emotional period for you.
Well, not really. I mean, like, you know, this is what happens. People, I mean, like, Robin Van Persie is, and like, you know, he is someone who is prone to injury, and anyone who thinks he's going to go and play 38 games in a season in the league for Arsenal is probably sadly deluded.
Well, he's had a good run recently, hasn't he? He's scored 8 goals.
Yeah, he's had a fantastic run. He's had a fantastic run of scoring goals, but you can't rely on him.
Leading a charmed
life. Yeah, you can't rely on him to stay fit. And you know,
it was going to happen at some point. It just happened to happen here. Is that what you reckon?
Yeah, it was going to happen. I mean, like, I've heard that he's going to be out for 2 months. Fine. Okay. There is nothing you can do about that. Then, like, you know, there's nothing worth getting upset about it or pontificating about it. Yes, all right, Bentner's out, Walcott's out. Yeah, but
yes,
you know, they said, you know, that they all had that Wenger thinks that he's got strikers there, and fine. Well, let's see how it goes.
I suppose Arsenal will be the latest team that will be sort of probably crying out for the transfer window to open as soon as possible, perhaps with the chance of beefing up the squad with one or two players, but time will tell, I guess. And as I say, they won't be the only team doing that. So, yes, another player crocked for Arsenal, and indeed for the Netherlands as they prepare for the World Cup next year, I guess. But he should be back well before that all starts. But it also, I mean, just talking about sort of friendlies generally.
No, let's not say how important they are. It's because it's not worth
well,
it.
Well, yeah, it's just I mean, yes, I mean, a bit futile at this time of the year. I mean, you'd think that the priority would be to rest some of the players, especially if you ask the likes of, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson and Rafa and all the rest of it. But there it is. I don't suppose any chat on our part is going to change any of that. So
no,
we'll leave that for some other time, I think. And just to sort of finish off really with a news story that came out just after the last podcast, which was the sad death of Robert Enke, Hannover 96 and Germany goalkeeper, who died last Tuesday. A 32-year-old apparently committed suicide. Well, basically the memorial ceremony took place today at the Hannover Stadium, attended by his wife Teresa and many of the members of the German national football team, many dignitaries and so on. Very sad occasion. And the one thing that struck me, fellas, about it was just how much coverage there was over here in England about a player which probably a lot of people over here probably would have even heard of, and yet it was just, I guess, the manner of Enke's death as much as anything else that brought it so much to light, and great shock all round, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. A great shock. But, yeah, I mean, you're right, he didn't have a great deal of a of a profile over here in the UK, and yet, yeah, he's the news and the, you know, the aftermath has been carried over. But I think that that's possibly because people perhaps see you know, lessons to be learnt, you know, all over, not just in football but in society in general. So yeah, I mean, but obviously a great shock and a tremendous loss for his family, and obviously for Hannover 96 as well.
Indeed, and Germany's friendly against Chile was cancelled. I think they're playing on Wednesday. I think they're with another friendly. I can't remember the opposition is, but yes. But a great, apparently a standing ovation for his wife after her very dignified comments to the press in the light of her husband's death and so on. So a sad loss to the game. And on that sad note, we bring our podcast to an end this week. Thanks, Terry and Graham, for the usual chat. Let's do this again next week, shall we?
Yep, all right, why not?
Not doing anything else? Oh, no, okay, fine. Right, well, thank you very much indeed for listening. Don't forget you can catch us on all the usual channels, on our blog site, soundoffootball.blogspot.com. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, and don't forget to leave us a comment if you can, and tell us what we're doing right or wrong. We'd be only too pleased to hear your feedback. We have a Facebook fan page, Sound of Football. You can catch us on there, and also via Twitter at all the various what's the word I'm looking for? You can catch us at sort of Terry DeFellin and Graham Sibley and Chris Oakley on Twitter. There you go. Feel free to get in touch. Thank you very much indeed for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it. Join us again next week for another Sound of Football. For now, goodbye.
Goodbye.